Accession number 28922, Real 1.
Skelton flew to Swordfish with Wilson. My name is Ted Whitley. I joined the Royal Air Force as a Halton apprentice on the 12th of January 1937, and on the 13th, HMS Illustrious was ordered. Work was started on her in April that year. When war became imminent, various groups in the Air Force were offered a chance to volunteer for service in the Navy. I volunteered. I'm not sure why. I think perhaps it was because I'd seen Illustrious being launched on the newsreels, but I've never regretted it. We passed out of our training in December of 1939, and in January 1940, I joined 819 Squadron at Ford in Sussex, forming up for HMS Illustrious. In May of that year, Lieutenants Garton, Stone and Skelton flew to Swordfish with Wilf Jones and I as maintainers up to Liverpool to Speke Airport, which is now Liverpool's John Lennon Airport. We were towed through the streets of Liverpool and arrived in the Gladstone Dock, where I first saw HMS Illustrious. A few days later, we went to sea on the flying trials, and though I was not supposed to do so, I was in the back cockpit of the first aircraft to land on HMS Illustrious. After a workup in Bermuda, we went out and joined the Eastern Mediterranean Fleet on the 3rd of September 1940, and with our radar and our former fighters and our Swordfish, which could do bombing and torpedoing, we created quite a lot of trouble in the Eastern Mediterranean, including, of course, the operation against Taranto. In January 10th, 1941, was a typical day. We had been up before daylight with the first range of anti-submarine patrols. These had continued through the morning, and about lunchtime, we had flown off some aircraft. Fortunately, 819 Squadron were not landing on any aircraft at this time, which was very fortunate, as I will explain later. Action station sounded at about 12:30. Normally, we had a fair amount of time before anything happened. I was very, very thirsty, and I thought I could grab a drink in the recreation space one deck down from the flight deck, so off I went on my way to my action station in the hangar. I had the drink in my hand when the guns opened up, and I don't know if it was our guns or bombs in the water, but my drink floated away. The canteen assistant and myself beat a hasty retreat, and I started on my way down to number 3 deck to get into the hangar. But the EMSs were putting water and presumably shrapnel inboard at this stage, and I decided I wouldn't go any further. I was opposite the sick bay, whose doors were open. I went in there. The scuttles were not closed. The curtains were horizontal, bottles were flying around. The noise was indescribable. And amongst it all, I heard an aircraft pulling out of a dive. It was something I had not heard before, but I knew what it was. It was a Stuka, and I knew we had problems. As the raid went on, there was this rather unusual feeling as if somebody had lifted the ship 2 or 3 inches out of the water and dropped it back in again, and I realized that we'd been hit. And this happened again, and again, and again. Eventually the noise stopped, and some sailors came down from the flight deck, obviously from the pom-poms on the starboard side, the port side. One of them had been wounded. He was not very badly wounded, and I remember him saying, "Never mind me, look after the rest." I decided it was time. I went down to the hangar. As I got down to number 3 deck, they were carrying a friend of mine below. He had a large hole in his overalls and his stomach was hanging out of it. He said, "It hurts." I said, "The doctor will fix you." I went to his funeral about 3 days later. Just before I got to the hangar, I bumped into some chaps from the squadron who said there was a fire forward, but I was more interested in what was in the hangar. I was surprised to find the armour-plated doors between the hangar and the forward lift closed, but there was still room to get through them. And I was even more surprised to find that the hangar was empty of people, except for one very, very still form lying on his face. He was dead. He was very, very big. He was too big for me to move by myself. And worse than that, looking aft, the whole of the after hangars of the ship was a mass of flame. And silhouetted against that flame were swordfish with fuel in them, torpedoes that were ready for use, and worse still, down each side of the hangar, a double row of magnetic mines. This new weapon had been invented after Illustrious was built. There was no stowage, presumably, for them, and they were in the forward hangar. They didn't have a best before date, they had a dangerous after date, and our CO had already taken away one and dropped it. I thought, if this fire gets in the forward hangar, we're going to lose the ship. I jumped out into the port access lobby, pulled the lever that closed off the hangar ventilation, pulled a chain which either told the engine room to start the pumps or started them, and opened the big wheel for the main valve. To my great relief, I heard water rushing down inside the hangar, and I said a little prayer. When I left the hangar, I realized that I didn't have my life belt. It was down on the mess deck. There was an office outside the hangar with the door blown off. There was a couple of life belts lying there, so I borrowed one. Oddly enough, at a time like this, the next thing you think of is, what's happened to my chum? So I started looking for Wolf Jones. I went back up the three decks onto the flight deck. And as my eyes came level with the deck, the first thing that I saw was the limbless torso of a man, mouth open, eyes open, body burnt. And opposite him, S2 Pompom on its mounting. And it was under this mounting that I would have sheltered if aircraft had been landing on. I looked down aft. The ship was going around in circles, almost in sight of Pantelleria, obviously out of control. The after lift was on end in its well. There was a hole almost on the centre line of the armour-plated flight deck, smoke coming out of it, steam coming off the deck where water had been put down. The forward lift was bent like the roof of a house. It was a beautiful day, the sea was calm, and I thought, the sea looks a better place than this ship. And when I had another look, all the other ships that were there with us that day when we picked up that convoy for Greece were all disappearing over the horizon. A couple of us ran a hose from starboard side forward down to the hole in the flight deck, but not very much water came out. The crew from the forward 4.5-inch guns were yelling for ammunition. Presumably their supply system had broken down. The after gun turrets were obviously damaged from the bombs that had gone down the lift well, but they had some ammunition. We started carrying this up the flight deck. A, I'm not very big. B, the shells are very heavy, and I only managed two. And our feet were getting very, very hot with the heat from the flight deck. The tannoy started working again, which was comforting because at least we could be told what was happening. And then another raid happened, and this time I only got down one deck before the guns opened up. Rather unwisely, I threw myself flat on the deck outside the spud locker on number two deck. There's loads of water there. I was wet through. It's the only damage I suffered that awful day. When things quietened down a bit, I went down to the mess deck, got myself a tin of 50 cigarettes, had a look at my then girlfriend's photograph, and wondered if I'd ever see her again. Carried on my search for Wolf Jones. Eventually I found him, and we were both presented with buckets to take water along number four deck passage on the starboard side, which I realised was running out of the hangar from the sprays that I turned on, because obviously the wreckage had blocked all the drains in the hangar. This went on for some time, and then we were given some bully beef sandwiches and told that those who were not involved in fighting the ship to go down below and sit there. And we were eating our sandwiches when a hatch opened and a face popped out, and a man said, "What's been happening?" I was trying to imagine what it was like where he was working, obviously in an engine room, with all the noise, feeling the ship being hit and so on. And it reflects, I think, great credit on Vickers Armstrong in Barrow, who had built the ship. There were one or two more raids during the day. We eventually were, with the destroyer for steering tow, carried on our way, and at about 9 o'clock managed to arrive in the harbour in Malta. The Maltese people were cheering our arrival. I couldn't understand why, really. I was walking on the flight deck, and there was a trouser pocket lying there, and I picked it up. It had one Egyptian piastre in it, and I wondered if it had belonged to this poor chap I'd seen lying there previously. I threw it over the side into the Grand Harbour. After 10 o'clock, I think we were secured alongside Palatoria Wharf, and then after landing all the wounded, we staggered down to the mess deck. My tin of 50 cigarettes was empty, although I hadn't smoked all of them myself. And we were so tired that we fell down to sleep on the stools where we normally sat to eat our meals. We then had to get all the wounded off the ship, which took a long time. My packet of 50 cigarettes was finished, although I hadn't smoked them all myself. And we eventually got down to the mess deck, and we were so tired we went to sleep just sitting on the lying on the stools at which we normally sat for our meals. The next morning, after a head count, we started clearing up the hangar. The forward lift had been removed by a dockyard crane, and the aircraft were being lifted out of the forward lift. The ones right forward had not been badly damaged, and obviously would be repaired at Calafrada and used later on. But the awful part of it was that we were beginning to find bits of people. And you tried to fix it so that somebody else moved the next bit, because you didn't know what you were going to find. I picked up a shoe, and it had a foot in it. And it was an officer's shoe. Officer's shoes don't have toe caps. And I wondered if it belonged to an officer who'd landed on the aircraft just before the raids started, one who'd stopped me from walking into a propeller a few weeks previously. So the attacks continued against the ship. Lieutenant Commander Flying, Lieutenant Commander Haggis Russell, had lost his kit in the first attack. He bought another one in Gives, stowed it in the Admiral's sea cabin, and the only hit the ship suffered in Malta, took his kit out through the side of the Admiral's cabin. There was other damage done to the ship underneath the waterline, mainly from near misses. Eventually they sent us all down the dockyard tunnels when the raids took place, and I think that the ship probably ran out of ammunition when the Germans gave up. On the 22nd of January, Lieutenant Commander Russell came to me and said, "Sorry, Whitley, we're putting you ashore in Malta for a rest." I went down below, I got my kit, and off I went to Halfar. I should have mentioned that one of these jobs we had to do earlier was packing up the kit of the people who were killed and wounded. And we'd spent Christmas in Alexandria, and it was awful seeing the presents that these people had bought, obviously hoping to take them home with them. I stayed in Malta until October 1942, which was hardly a rest, and is another story, of course. And I didn't see Illustrious again until about 1951, when I was doing a training job in the Plymouth area, She was the trials and training carrier. I often saw her when we were going out sailing with the apprentices or crossing the ferry into Plymouth. And to finish off the story, when she was finally retired and went to the breakers yard in about 1955, I was the deputy air engineer officer of HMS Bulwark, which was the ship which relieved her as the trials and training officer. And that's the end of my story about Illustrious.